Welcome to Missing Persons Uncovered. I'm Caroline Humer, a child protection expert, and in this podcast series, we seek to understand the complexities of a global issue. Every year, hundreds of thousands of people go missing worldwide.
I'm Karen Shalev, and I carry out research into missing persons at the University of Portsmouth in the UK. Across this series, Caroline and I are talking to professionals to share insights into how we can all be more aware and take actions to protect vulnerable people in our communities and families from going missing.
Today, Karen is talking to Stefana Junko about the complexity of public appeals and how good or bad we are in recognizing a missing person from their posters.
Hello and welcome everyone. Thank you for joining this episode of the podcast series. Today we are joined by Stefana Junko, and we'll be talking about publicity appeals and how they're used and some of the issues around that. So thank you for joining us, Stefana.
It's my pleasure.
Do you want to give us a little bit of background as to how you even got involved in this field?
It was very early on in my career, I want to say. So I was doing my undergraduate in criminology with psychology. And during my second year, I tried to figure out what I want to do for my third year dissertation. Of course, very, very scared of what's to come. And I don't know how I just came across this. I think it was somewhere in the news where it just said that someone in the UK is being reported missing every 2 minutes. And then I was shocked by the fact that I was doing a full degree in criminology and psychology, and I just had no idea about anything to do with missing persons or missing persons investigations. So I decided that at least I want to do a dissertation on it. I thought it was really, really interesting. And then my supervisor at the time got in touch with the Missing People charity and with Joe when he used to work for the NCA. And then we had a meeting with them. And I thought, this is it. This is exactly what I want to do for my research going on. So I did my dissertation on missing persons appeals and how the public engages with them. And then from there, it was just one thing after another. I just realized I wanted to do more face recognition and to try to improve the appeals, not just to see why people getting engaged with them. That's how it started, just me realizing I know nothing about it and why I don't know anything about it.
So I think people listening probably are very familiar with publicity appeals. We see them a lot. We see them in the news quite often. And so maybe we'll start with asking, when are publicity appeals released to the public and why?
I think first, before answering that, I think it's really, really important to distinguish between the appeals that are managed and distributed by authorities such as the police or their partners, some specific charities, and then appeals that are created and circulated by families and friends of missing people. I think in both of these scenarios, the main reason is probably to reach out to the public and ask them to help, to be on the lookout for this missing person and to contact the authorities if they know where the missing person might be. And then it's also another why would be to try to get in contact with the missing person themselves, to let them know that people are looking for them and caring for them. Although saying this, in some cases, it might actually make it harder for them to come home. So it's very, very tricky to know when, on top of the fact that they need to get to terms with why they went missing and what's happening while they're missing. Then a lot more people will know that they were missing and they have to deal with these consequences, which is really, really difficult for any of us. I think there's also a couple more whys to mention, particularly when thinking about the police releasing appeals. They might release these appeals just to make sure that the family and their loved ones know that they're doing everything they can in specific cases, and also to increase awareness of missing persons cases and missing persons investigations with the wider public. And now when, that's a way more complex issue. It's really, really hard in a lot of cases to estimate when the right time is. It usually depends on the amount of information that you have to conduct that investigation and the investigative practices that are used, which are really ultimately used to try to conduct a risk assessment, which is just a way of measuring how severe the case is and how likely a harm is in that case. And then based on that risk assessment, you would decide when the risk is higher or outweighs the consequences of releasing this missing person appeal. It's really, really difficult to say in general. It really depends on a case-by-case basis, which I'm sure you've heard and said a lot in this podcast. Some forces or some charities only, for example, release appeals for high-risk cases. And I think we need to consider some of the consequences when trying to estimate when. So one of them would be just the need for additional resources. If a case becomes very, very highly publicized, releasing an extra appeal might mean that the police has to have enough additional resources to deal with the incoming attention or incoming number of citing. Of course, this is, again, from a policing perspective, families and friends might release the appeals anyway, but it is something that families and friends should still consider, and they should probably never, ever put their own phone number on the appeal. And this leads me to another consequence, which is just the fact that appeals can sometimes increase the harm in specific cases. Specifically, if there are any vulnerable people while missing, they could increase the risk of exploitation. There's a lot of things to consider when trying to realize when. The final thing is just the digital footprint that the appeals create. And the right to be forgotten. This is something that we refer to as the right to be forgotten, particularly online. But it's really, really difficult, if not impossible sometimes, to delete all of the information, especially if a missing person's appeals has been released on social media. There's this ethical issue to consider that once you put that appeal out there, the information will probably still out there. And then when the missing person is hopefully found, they will have to deal with this consequence for the rest of their life. And the families might have to deal with some trolling or cyberbullying while the person is missing. So there's a lot more than just finding the missing person that needs to be considered. It's what's happening with the appeal at the larger level.
Let's talk about how are they created and is there logic to how they're designed.
I think there's some sort of logic to it, but at this stage is mainly based on previous experience and obviously a bit of common sense rather than a lot of empirical research. It really depends on who's creating them again.
I think about the members of the public. When you go out and you see, for example, posters and things like that, they tend to look the same, just the image of the person is different, right? Because it's a different person. But there seems to be like a template. Is there logic to it, or is it just because somebody decided to design it that way?
I think the research at the moment, we're still trying to figure out exactly what should be included. There is logic to it, as in an image is better than no image. There's a little bit of research specific from my previous PhD research showing that having the name in there should improve the effectiveness of the appeal. Although saying that, we only looked at first names. We're still doing research now, trying to look at the effect of both first name and the surname together with you, which is great. So there is some research about it. But when we think of other information that might be included, the public might notice that depending on who's distributing it, for example, if it's a specific police force rather than the missing people charity, some more information might be included. So, for example, they might say what they were last seen wearing or some sort of distinctive information or a distinctive feature. We're still trying to see if this extra information helps, but from theoretical reasons, it should help because it gives you more things to go for.
For example, if you have a poster with just one image versus several images, is there any evidence to say that several images are better than one?
Yeah, for sure. So there is some research showing that, including in our research, we looked at 3 versus 1, but we also looked at the type of images used, using images from different contexts, just showing how the missing person looks like in a lot of different contexts will improve. So rather than just showing 5 images from their last birthday, showing 5 images from one of their last birthdays, one image that someone else took, one a selfie from a social media profile, showing how their face varies in different lighting and with different emotions, different days, maybe different hairstyles, with, without makeup, or longer or shorter facial hair. So just showing how that face varies improves our familiarity with the face, which then increases our chances that we're going to notice them and recognize them if we encounter them later on.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the research in this area?
Yeah, so we look a lot at face recognition and how we can apply previous face recognition findings on improving missing persons appeals. One of the things that I discussed is we looked at how different images improve our familiarity with the face, and then we tried to see if it would also help the way we can spot missing persons. We also look at other written information. Some of my studies look at if we include some sort of contextual information, such as seeing them wearing a red t-shirt and then they do wear a red t-shirt. Does that also improve the effectiveness of the appeal? I also, as I said previously, I've conducted some research on public perceptions of these appeals to see why the public engages with these appeals on social media. I think it's also because it's really important to acknowledge the fact that sometimes the success of these appeals depends on how much people share them and how many people see them. So I also wanted to see it from that perspective, you know, is some sort of information better than others? And there has been research, not from my own research, that showed that, for example, going back to the multiple images, people tend to retweet missing persons appeals more if they include multiple images rather than just one. When we're thinking of what to include, we should always consider how can we increase the engagement and the attention to them, as well as the memory processes.
This is quite psychological. I'm thinking for members of the public, when they see an appeal, are we generally good at going, oh, I saw the appeal and this is the person that I recognize? We hear sometimes of success stories that police received information and or somebody recognized somebody and called the police and somebody was found that was missing, sometimes even many years. Are we generally good at that, at recognizing people like that?
Bad news here. It's difficult to tell. So when we test it in the lab, I think we find it very, very difficult. It's a difficult task. I think we all think we're good at recognizing faces because we have so many people we recognize. We have so many friends, so many colleagues, so many students in our case, and we're quite good at telling them apart and telling them which ones we've seen before or not. So we have this misconception that we're quite good at face recognition. However, when you test someone's face recognition abilities with a completely new face, which is what would happen in missing persons appeals most of the time, we find it very, very difficult to learn that face, particularly from just a poster, and then spotting them in a different context whatsoever. Saying that, there are some things that we're just trying to make better. Sometimes we see an increase from 10% to 15%, but sometimes you only need those extra couple accurate sighting for someone to be found. So we're really, really trying to just increase the performance in this very difficult task. I wouldn't say we're very, very good at it, but I think we could be better than we are.
We talk about memory, right, here, because you have to remember what you've seen and then apply it in a way to recognize someone. Without giving people a lecture in psychology about how that works, but there's this thing called prospect memory. So maybe you can explain a little bit about it, and then how does it relate to these types of cases? Why is it important for us to understand it?
In our studies, when we're trying to test this effectiveness of the appeals, we need to first figure out what memory processes are involved. And to do that, we have to think of the timeline in which it happens. Sometimes what happens is that someone already encounters a missing person on the street, and then later on, they don't know that person is missing or anything, but then later on, they come across a missing person appeal. And at that moment of the appeal, they realize they've seen this person before, and hopefully they will let the authorities know. So this is one possible timeline. It can also happen the other way around, where you can first see a missing person appeal, and then you create this intention that you're going to look for them in the future. And then if you do see them, you're going to let the authorities know. Is this second timeline that we call prospective memory, in which we create an intention to do something in the future. Prospective memory, just in simple terms, is exactly this, is remembering to do something in the future. And we use this type of memory all the time in our life for very simple things like remembering to brush your teeth or remembering to take your pills at a specific time in the day, or even remembering to send an email the next time you're at your computer. And the main difference here is the fact that with missing persons appeals, you have to remember to do something in the future when you encounter a specific face. We call that a memory cue, that seeing that face makes you remember the fact that you've seen this missing person appeal and they are the same person. So you should call the authorities. So
be good at remembering, for example, the intention and the image. Are we okay at remembering that? Is there a problem with the recognizing or seeing the cue and recognizing it's a cue and making that connection with the...
We're quite good at remembering the intention, but where we find it very difficult to see the face and recognize them as the missing person. Sometimes you can see a face and have this sense of familiarity, thinking, oh yeah, I've seen this person before, but just not connect the dots to think, oh yeah, this is the missing person I've seen in an appeal 3 days ago. What we're trying to do is we're trying through these appeals to give the public a bit more things that they can connect. Going back to my example with the clothing, if in the appeal you had an image, but also some information, for example, they might be wearing a red coat, and then you see their face and you have this sense of familiarity, it might be that additional cue of a red coat that makes you help connect the dots. I think we're quite good at remembering the intention. It's just recognizing that person as the missing person, going a bit further than just having that feeling that, oh, I've seen them before, but I don't know where. And everyone has this feeling sometimes. It's even harder because you've never had a personal interaction with that person. You've just learned their face from an appeal. And this is what we're trying to do most with our research, is to make sure they have that, oh yeah, I've seen this person in this appeal and I need to call the authorities.
So based on the research, what should we include in missing persons appeal to increase the effectiveness?
I think before I say anything, I have to say we need a lot more research.
It's very early days, isn't it? There's that much research on this. Yeah.
It's, you know, when I've started my PhD, I've only studied prospective person memory for my PhD. So this was my entire life for a few years. And I remember in the beginning, I think there were less than 10 papers on the matter. And I thought, oh, this is so easy. All I have to do is read these 10 papers. And then it did grow, but it is still, in comparison with other types of face recognition or other research on missing persons investigations, it's very much in its infancy. Based on the little research that we do have, I think one of the first things we discussed, including multiple images, is probably a very simple one. It's good because it improves our memory of the face, but also it improves the attention to the appeal. So if you walk by in a supermarket and a missing person appeal has three images rather than one, it's more likely to draw your attention to it. I think some other information, such as the location or where you might encounter them, can also help. There's been some research in the US showing that increasing public's expectation that they're going to see this person can double the percentage of accurate sightings. Most of the time, I think people who encounter these appeals, they have this very low expectation that they're actually going to encounter the missing person later. And this is why, even if they have that sense of familiarity, or even if they see the missing person, they're not confident enough to report a sighting. Anything that we can include to increase this expectation. In the experiments, what they did is they told people that the people they're on the lookout for can either be on campus or in the library. Obviously, both of the informations are correct, but when you're in the library, your expectation to encounter that person is a lot higher. This extra location information is just an extra cue to help you connect those dots.
For example, if the police would say places where this person is likely to be seen.
Exactly. Or rather than just knowing that someone went missing in Portsmouth to someone went missing in a specific area of Southsea, even if you don't live there, you walk by that specific area of Southsea, that will cue your memory of the poster and you're more likely to look around you. But we don't have the attention or the resources needed to always look out for them, no matter where we are in Portsmouth. The more you can really localize where people should pay attention, the better. We talked about names a bit. So having some sort of name, I think, helps.
We advocated that in previous research for publicity appeals to include wherever possible just the first name, mainly because of that digital footprint that you mentioned before. It lowers the risk of that hangover 100%. That impacts people's lives. So you found in your research about the use of first person?
We found that including just first names improves performance on this prospective person memory task. I think there's something about knowing someone's name that changes the way you think or you look at the poster. It's more than just a face. It's a person with a name. Saying that, I also completely agree with you that a first name is probably enough. And this is why we're trying to do the research we're doing now. On the other hand, it's also important to know that a lot of the sightings for the missing persons appeals comes from people who already know the person. We are a lot better at prospective person memory if it is a familiar face. So everything I've said about, oh, this is very, very difficult, it's not if you already know that person. If you tell me next time you see your colleague do this, I will be very good at that because I already know them. Having their name sometimes might help with that. But again, if they are familiar enough, they probably wouldn't even know their second name. They only know them by their first name. That will probably be enough. More research needs to be done. I think there's also been some research showing that the more appeals someone sees, particularly if they look identical, the less likely they are to look for any of those people. Although it's really, really hard trying to find this balance between increasing awareness and trying to look for all of the missing people, while also trying not to desensitize the public to the issue. I think that's very important and very difficult. Don't
so
ask
do you
me how.
Mean if there's like a weekly appeal, is that what you mean, that there's like the fatigue?
There's not enough research to know particularly what time is an accurate amount of time. But if you see an appeal a week rather than an appeal a day, you're way more likely to have the attentional resources and to remember that one appeal better.
Right.
If you see one appeal a day, you're more likely to confuse them and just by the fifth day, just not pay attention to them because you haven't seen those first five missing people. So your expectation decreases as well. For the general public, I would say too many appeals are probably more damaging to each individual appeal.
What should people be aware of or do when they see a poster next time of a person missing that can actually help them improve their own recognition?
Probably the hardest question, this one. Just trying to engage with the poster and just trying to read the information, look at the images and just try to create links. Maybe they look like someone you already know, or just try to think, does this name suit them? Or just trying to actively look and get familiarized with that person, I think is probably the best that the public can do in those scenarios. We haven't really looked at this with the prospective person memory, but there has been previous face recognition research more generally to show that just being more active while you learn someone's face will help you identify them later. Just trying to actively engage with it. And we are running some eye tracking studies. So we look at the way people look at these posters and we're trying to see if some people are just better at the task. So then maybe in the future, I can answer this question better. Maybe some people look at them differently and they are better, but we're still collecting data. So I think, honestly, there's so much you can do as the person who just sees the poster. The first good step is just stop and have a look at it rather than worry about your day-to-day and walk by and you did see it, but you didn't really take it all in. I think that's probably the best advice.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much. It's been really interesting
you.
And helpful.
Thank you for joining us today. And thank you, Stefana Junko, for sharing your expertise into public appeals. Definitely more research needs to be done here.
If you have any questions you would like us to answer or thoughts on topics you would like us to discuss, please contact us through our website. If you'd like specific information or need help, please reach out to your local police department or national charity. If you are enjoying this podcast and discussion, please help support us by buying us a coffee through missingpersonsuncovered.com.
I'm Karen Shalev.
And I'm Caroline Humer. Thank you for listening. Join us next time when we talk to Brian Frederick about LGBTQ+ community and some of them going missing.